Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
What is up, everybody? We are back. Welcome on in to the FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast. It is Tuesday, February 16th. 2021. Hopefully everybody had a nice weekend, nice Valentine's Day. Adam Pfeiffer here. Joe Metz back with me as always to break down Tuesday's six-game slate. It was a seven-game slate. One game got postponed. And this seven-game slate's pretty, or this six-game slate's pretty interesting. Joe, we have some injuries. We have some stars that are out. We have a ton of superstars still on the slate with LeBron and Giannis and Jokic and the Brooklyn guys and Lillard. So for six games, it's pretty interesting. What's going on?
Doing well. Still, obviously, we record this. So it's Monday night when we're recording, and Monday's slate, actually, I'd say probably three of the most popular games haven't even tipped off yet. So a lot of ambiguity on this slate and a lot of ambiguity on the Tuesday slate, which we are about to address with the postponement. You know, Anthony Davis now being out for a while, shorthanded Denver. So we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we do. I think the Anthony Davis, we'll talk about it, but it's like, I hate to say it, but it's like, it felt like it was only a matter of time, because the beginning of the season, it was okay, is he really injured? And then lately, it's like, he clearly has an Achilles. Like, is he, if he's not 100%, if you were resting him earlier in the year with more minor injuries. Yeah. I don't know why you're playing them until he's, I didn't get it.
Yeah, I mean, you and I talked about it before we got on air. Like, it just doesn't, with how cautious they've been over the last season and a half with him, like, why of all injuries that you choose to push, are you pushing an Achilles injury in the first half of the season? It just doesn't make sense. And unfortunately, like, this is a consequence of them being too liberal with his load management.
Yeah. We'll talk about the Lakers. They're at Minnesota, and obviously LeBron will probably be very popular. But we'll start with the team they faced on, what was it, Sunday night, the Denver Nuggets at the Boston Celtics here. Denver, I mean, already missing guys heading into that Laker game. They're without Gary Harris and PJ Dozier and Will Barton, who's been out for personal reasons. And Paul Millsap gets hurt, and now Monty Morris is questionable with a shoulder injury. Millsap's already out for this game. Barton's out again. Harris and Dozier are out. And Morris is questionable. So Denver could be really shorthanded here. Like I said, though, we already have Millsap and Barton out. That obviously helps Michael Porter Jr., Jamichael Green, and that obviously just solidifies somebody like Nikola Jokic, who, the only thing we haven't talked about Jokic is the fact that he's playing like 38 minutes in close games, like, unlike last year where he's like 33-34, which is why he's been one of the best players in the league this year. But let's get the obvious out of the way. I mean, Jokic, always an elite play, but especially now. I mean, with Barton and Millsap off the floor this year, Jokic has a 32.5% usage rate, 37% rebounding rate, 25% assist rate, and he's averaging 1.7 fantasy points per minute. So feel free to play Nikola Jokic, especially against Boston, who are allowing the second most sixth most points per game to the post, and Jokic trails only Joel Embiid in post-up possessions and points per game. So anything you want to add on Jokic, I mean, 10-7, but shorthanded.
No, I would argue 10-7 is a little cheap for him. He's been consistently at about 11K or 11-1 for the last few slates, so we are getting a bit of a discount. And I think because of the aforementioned Anthony Davis issue, we will see lower ownership with so many probably flocking to LeBron by default. So I think this is a good spot to target Jokic. You know, the Celtics interior isn't necessarily one to fear with Al Horford gone. So I absolutely love it. And especially with how shorthanded they are, he'll obviously, you know, the usage and the peripherals that are vacated are incremental, but it's still more than nothing. And he will obviously be one of the primary players that picks that up. Obviously, the bigger impact, though, is going to go to those role players. Like you mentioned, Michael Porter Jr., he's seen 30 minutes or more in two of the last three games. You know, it's been 30 and 31, so it's been right at that threshold. But that's something that we've seen Michael Malone pretty hesitant to do over the last 6 to 8 months, you know, dating back to the bubble, outside of that probably 4 or 5 game stretch when he was just on fire. he's going to be forced into minutes here, especially with Millsap out. I have a hard time seeing him drop below 30. I mean, it is definitely in the range of outcomes that he could still play 26, 27 minutes, and they just force feed minutes to Jamichael Green. They somehow get like they run small and have like RJ Hampton play more of the three. There are ways for them to not give Michael Porter Jr. 30 minutes. I just don't see that. So with 30 minutes of Michael Porter Jr. at 5,800, I think he's a good play. Like, his ceiling is obviously sky high on any given slate, but he has so much extra opportunity where I think he will be rightfully one of the more popular players on the slate.
Yeah, he's 1.1 fantasy points per minute with Barton and Millsap off the floor, relatively high usage player. Jamichael Green should be able to get up to, upwards of 25 minutes here.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Millsap played 16 minutes before getting hurt, so Jamichael Green played, I think, like 15 or 16 as well in that last game. He played 14, but if he can get up to 22, 23 minutes, he's been relatively productive this year off the bench. He has a massive rebounding rate with those players off the floor that I mentioned, Barton and Millsap. Rebounding rate's well over 30%. And then, look, if Monty Morris is out, they got really, really nice minutes from Campazzo on Sunday night. He looked good. Obviously not as safe as potentially these other guys because they still have, obviously, Jamal Murray. But, like, no Gary Harris, no P.J. Dozier, potentially no Monty Morris. I mean, Campazzo could play. I mean, he played 25 minutes last game, and he earned those minutes. He played great. 3,300, he could be somebody to kind of keep an eye on. I want to circle back to Jamal Murray, though, who I think is probably going to be, like, the overlooked player from this team still because he's been pretty underwhelming this year. But he's been good in the last two games. And this is kind of a sneaky spot here because Boston's so bad this year against handoffs, and that's what we love to target when we're looking at this Denver team. They currently are allowing the second most points per game at nearly 7 per game and the most points per possession off the handoff this season. Murray's still averaging over 3 points per game off handoffs, second most in the league. Obviously, that could correlate well with Jokic. I kind of like that pairing in tournaments, especially because the minutes should be solidified, the usage should be higher for both these players with all the injuries, especially if Monty Morris is out.
Yeah, I agree. I really like that call because I definitely think he will be overlooked. You know, we've talked about it all season. Anytime he's really below like 7,400, I think that's a solid price to target him at. And he's been below that over the last two and a half, three weeks roughly. So this is a good range to target him in. I don't know if I will prioritize him, obviously, over Jokic, over Michael Porter Jr., just with price baked in. I think Porter Jr. obviously frees up a bit more for you to use elsewhere. But I definitely like that call. I'm curious if you have any strong thoughts on RJ Hampton. It seems like he has been, I don't want to say more involved because he hasn't done a ton on the court. But, I mean, 19, 19, 20 minutes over his last three games. I assume if Monty Morris misses, that's only more minutes to siphon off to him just because he's one of the only remaining guards. And then they can obviously slide him down to the three now with Will Barton out if they slide Michael Porter Jr. to the four and Paul Millsap's play. So is there any appeal there at only 3,400?
Yeah. I think, like I said, like I'd probably feel safer about his minutes than Campazzo's.
Yeah, that's fair.
And he like the last four or five games, he's become part of the rotation anyway. So like he's going to play with Harris and Barton and P.J. Dozier out 17 to 20 minutes. And if Morris is out, he can get up to 25.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think a lot of these Denver guys are viable. Obviously, Jokic just probably going to smash again. Let's go to Boston, though. Jason Tatum did not smash in his last game. Just 6 real points. He shot 3 of 14 from the field. Not expecting that to continue. Daniel Tice is questionable for this game with a finger injury, so keep an eye on that. But you have Kemba at 6'5", you have Tatum at 8'7", and you have Jaylen Brown at 7'8". I think they're all kind of viable. Like, Kemba has been shooting so bad prior to his last game, where he shot 9 of 18. He still has a huge usage rate since returning to lineup, and over the last 10 games, it's what you'd expect it to be for Boston. It's a three-man team in terms of usage. It's Kemba, he's third on the team in usage rate during that span at 27.5%. Which is a high number, and Tatum's at 29.5, and Jaylen Brown's at 29.4. So it's just, like, Kemba's going to play 30 to 32 minutes, and at 6,500, like, those are enough minutes and a decent matchup. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you prefer Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Tatum leads his team in drives per game still. Denver cannot protect the rim. They don't really have anybody that can guard him, especially if Michael Porter Jr. has to play more four in this game and just play more minutes. Mm-hmm. That's a great matchup for Jason Tatum. So Tatum, Jaylen Brown at 7,800, I just, anytime he's under 8K, I know he's been more of a floor option as of late, but in a matchup like this, he just takes 20 shots every game, essentially. I think he's perfectly fine. Do we like anybody else from Boston, though? Like, if Tice is out, any Tristan Thompson? Talk about Boston.
I have a hard time trusting a Tristan Thompson or even, like, a Time Lord Robert Williams, just strictly because, like, Denver's been a pretty susceptible matchup just about all season. They do struggle around the rim. My concern with both Thompson and Robert Williams is how easy it would be for them to fall into foul trouble against Nikola Jokic. Obviously, Tristan Thompson being a seasoned veteran, he has a better chance to hold his own than a Robert Williams, but I just don't think you need to get that cute on this slate. So if I am looking at Boston, it's going to be Jason Tatum as my number one priority. I would probably prioritize Kemba second, just because, like you said, Jaylen Brown has been a bit more of a floor option, especially on FanDuel. He's still 8,400 compared to Kemba Walker being 6,200. So I think the point per dollar upside is just much higher for Kemba. But I think those three are rock solid options. I don't think you necessarily need to get cute and look elsewhere.
Fair enough. Let's move on to the New Orleans Pelicans at the Memphis Grizzlies. Total for this game opening up at 230. And Memphis, slight favorites at home. They're opening up as 1-point favorites in Memphis. Zion continues to score at a ridiculous rate. He's shot over 50%, or at least 50%, in 9 of his last 10 games. He scored at least 20 real points in 8 of those games. And we've talked about the peripherals, and they're still not, like, earth-shattering. But in the month of February, he's averaging over 5.5 rebounds per game, almost 4.5 assists, which is definitely up from other months. And he's averaging over a block and nearly a steal per game. 8,200 for Zion, I'm still good with it. Like, I think he is just unstoppable right now on offense. Like, and if he walks into peripherals and he walks into rebounds, he's going for 50, and he seems to give you 40 plus every game. I don't think this price is you know, too high. I don't think it's too low. I think it's kind of just right for Zion.
I agree. And, you know, looking at the slate first glance, it's hard to argue with the statement that Zion might be one of the safest plays on the slate. You know exactly what you're getting. You're getting 38 to 44 fantasy points. But what we've seen, especially like last game got me so excited when he had 8 rebounds. Like, if that starts coming around, like that 38 to 44 is probably going to creep more up to 42 to 48 and 46 to 52. Like, we will start to see his median outcome climb, and then we will also see more ceiling games. So I think this is it's weird to say a buy low spot, but I think we are ahead of the curve in terms of Zion and his ceilings. And I think the masses have kind of jumped ship from him at this price. His ownership at the beginning of the season was pretty significant, and it hasn't been the same since. So I absolutely love that call, and I think they will need his size against this front court. I can't say I've been on the Brandon Ingram bandwagon just about all season. He's been really solid this season, especially these last two games. I just don't know if I'd prioritize him over Zion in this matchup. What are your thoughts on getting up to Ingram for $200 more?
I do prefer Zion, but I don't hate Brandon Ingram here. I mean, the Grizzlies are 21st against scorers this year. They're also terrible against shooters off screen. They allow the fourth highest field goal percentage at 44% and the third most points per possession to shooters off screen. Ingram leads his team in points per game off screens. I don't hate him. I just don't know who else to play from this team. I think Lonzo's a little bit too expensive at 6,700. Steven Adams is cheap, but he doesn't really have a consistent enough floor-ceiling combination for me. And then I just haven't played Eric Bledsoe unless some of these guys are out. He's obviously way cheaper than Lonzo, but there's a reason. I mean, he's gone for 30 fantasy points in three of his last 10 games. Like, it's just...
Yeah, you don't have to, trust me, you do not have to talk me off of Eric Bledsoe, because I'm never on Eric Bledsoe.
I just don't know who else to play from this team. Like,
Josh
Hart has had a role, but 4,600 for 23 to 25 minutes, you gotta hope he gets double-digit rebounds in those minutes, which he can kind of, but then if that happens, and Zion's probably underwhelmed, it's like...
Yeah. I'm okay with Lonzo for 6,700. My concern, though, like you kind of mentioned about Josh Hart, it rings true for Lonzo as well. You saw as Zion's rebounds got higher, Lonzo Ball lost his rebounds. Like it's not going to correlate well between the two in terms of peripheral production. They're actually going to negatively correlate. Excuse me. So I typically Lonzo and a player like Zion are ones that correlate well together, but we haven't seen that quite enough this season to really want me to play both in like one lineup. But if you're not playing Zion or Ingram and want exposure to the Pelicans, I think Lonzo's a fine target at 6,700.
What are you looking at from Memphis here?
Jonas Valanciunas is a stud. Like, I mean, 46 fantasy points in 26 minutes last game. Prior to that, he hadn't dipped below 38. His rebounds have been absolutely massive outside of an 8-rebound game against the Lakers, which is obviously a much more difficult matchup. He's posted rebounding totals of 20, 15, and 30, or 13, not 30, 13 over his last four games. This is a bigger front court with Zion and Steven Adams, so I would like to think he will creep up towards and maybe above that 30-minute range again, especially given his recent play. My only concern is the fact that Brandon Clark is available, and you know, he played 22 minutes last game, and that was, you know, Brandon Clark will pick up minutes at the five, and we saw that happen. And then it was obviously an impacted Jonas, who saw his lowest minutes total in the last four games. So there is some baked in inherent risk now that Brandon Clark is back and seems to be healthy enough to give it, I don't want to say a full go, but I don't see him dipping below 22, 24 minutes again. But it's hard not to like Jonas in tournaments. So he's probably my number one priority on Memphis.
Him and Ja are close for me.
Ja's minutes are finally up towards what we're used to.
And that's huge for him because his ceiling has been pretty, like I compared it last week. Like he's like, if you take half of like the huge ceiling games that Trae Young posts, that's what Ja Morant gets. So if Trae Young goes for like 30 and 15 or 30 and like 16 assists, then Ja can get you like 15 to 20 points and 8 to 9. Like that's, he kind of gets those games, which are fine. And he's still not priced egregiously. I will add with Valanciunas, Memphis, third worst field goal percentage allowed to the post at 54%. So that's good for him. But New Orleans, like despite having Zion and Steven Adams, they're bottom five in field goal percentage allowed at the rim this year too. That bodes well for Ja Morant, who is fourth in the NBA in drives per game at nearly 20 per game. The Pelicans are also 24th against crafty finishers, according to our advanced DVP, 23rd against dimers. I like Ja here. Valanciunas definitely is a little bit more risky at 7,600 if he's playing 27 to 29 minutes instead of upwards of 32, especially at with a price increase with Brandon Clark back. But there's definitely still always upside with him. Kyle Anderson's been pretty good lately. He's coming off a huge game, 17-6-4 with four steals. He's been really good in the stocks department. He has at least one block in, five straight games.
Yeah.
The steals have been there. He handles the ball a little bit when Ja's out of the game. I don't love that price when this team's at pretty much full health. I know they're still without Jaren Jackson Jr. and Melton and Bain, but then you have, you know, Grayson Allen, who's been playing upwards of 32 minutes most games, and he's been pretty solid, actually, like shooting the ball at a decent clip. Would you consider any of these secondary Memphis guys that we haven't talked about? I know Dylan Brooks is also coming off a nice game. I just haven't played him this year because they are clearly not. I mean, I guess, no, like even in close games, I know Memphis has had a lot of blowouts this year. His price isn't terrible, but they just, even with Bain and Melton out, they just have a handful of other guys they play to where Dylan Brooks doesn't rarely play huge minutes. So this Memphis team has a pretty deep rotation.
Yeah, I think the only other ancillary piece that I have interest in is Grayson Allen again, just because D'Anthony Melton and Desmond Bane remain out. Obviously, Grayson Allen does not possess like a massive ceiling, but two games ago we saw him post a shade under 34 fantasy points. He's reached 30 or more minutes in three straight games. And in two of those three games, he shot 13 times in each game. And he's seen 10-plus three-point attempts in two of those last three. And obviously on DraftKings, where he is cheap, that is a bit of an added bonus. Return of Brandon Clark will take away some shots here and there, but I still I think he's a fine value for 4,700 because I feel like you know what you're getting. You're not going to go out there and like a 10 fantasy point. I don't know, sure, it's in his range of outcomes, but he's not one of those screaming values. It's like, oh, this guy is either going to go for 12 fantasy points or 30. Like, I feel like he is relatively safe where you're banking on, you know, 24 plus, and you should be okay with that at his price for 4,700. So I'm fine with Grayson Allen on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, Memphis in the last game played 10 guys in rotation, and they were without Bane and Melton. So, like, they were still perfectly fine. And Jaren Jackson Jr., obviously, yep, hasn't played, yep, this year. All right, let's move on. Pretty interesting game here. Toronto at Milwaukee. The Bucks still going to be without Jrue Holiday, I believe. That's all I see from injury news in this game, though. Apparently, Toronto is looking at Andre Drummond. Not really sure why. But
yeah, I had my God, like, it just does not. I don't think that makes someone.
He's younger than Chris. He's younger than Chris Boucher. I'll say that, but
that blows my mind.
I know
that he is younger than Chris Boucher. That's like when you think about Travis Kelce being the same age as Gronk. It just doesn't compute in my brain. I just don't like sidebar. It just doesn't make sense why a team one Toronto going from like the 7 seed to the 5 seed. Like, is Andre Drummond really going to get you there and help you win a playoff series? No. Absolutely not.
Yeah. Let's start with Milwaukee, though. Like I said, I believe Jrue Holiday is still going to be out. So, mm-hmm, obviously, Giannis has been ridiculous lately. Chris Middleton, 8K, is really perfectly fine for him. But Giannis has just been... I don't know, man. I think Giannis might have heard everybody talking about the MVP top five players, and he wasn't on a lot of people's lists. And he's been hooping lately, just getting all the rebounds. The blocks and steals have been great. 11K, rare occasion where he's actually 11K. But, I mean, without Jrue Holiday, it's just like Milwaukee's going to have – not that they've been blowing teams out as much as last year anyway, but especially without Jrue Holiday, like, a lot of these games are going to be closer, which means Giannis plays 36 to 38 minutes, which means since he's averaging like 1.5, 1.6 fantasy points per minute, he's going to smash. He has 75-point upside.
Yeah, I mean, it pains me as a Bucks fan to say this. The reason he's running so hot and playing so much is because the Bucks can't close games right now. Like, they, we have really been struggling. I mean, I say we like I'm on the court, but the Bucks have really been struggling, one, to string together dominant wins. Like, you don't see them winning by 30 or even like 20 anymore with the consistency that they did these last two seasons. But that has really, really skyrocketed the late fantasy appeal of Giannis, because, like, look at his last three games. Like, he's averaging just about 70 fantasy points per game. Like, 11K is still too cheap, and Toronto is a team that can keep it close. And while they can keep it close, I don't think they can stop a freight train like Giannis. He's obviously matchup proof. Giannis is my top overall play on the slate. He's a 1A to LeBron's 1B. I still feel a bit more confident in Giannis in this matchup given, and then I do LeBron in his, just because there is still blowout potential in the other one. But again, I'll say this every time the Bucks are on the podcast, especially with Jrue Holiday out. If you're not getting Giannis exposure and what you expect to be a close game, you need Chris Middleton exposure.
Yeah, Middleton's been a little underwhelming, but still has a 26% usage rate without Jrue Holiday this year, 1.3 fantasy points a minute, 21% assist rate. Obviously, Giannis, 32% usage, 22% assist rate, 32% rebounding rate. I know Middleton's been underwhelming the last two games. I don't care. He should probably be a little bit more expensive in this spot. With Holiday once again out. Do we like anybody else from this game? I mean, DiVincenzo at 5'4 is coming off a nice game, but
it's just getting to the point where is there really that much? Like,
Augustine's going to play 22 to 25 minutes, and then you also
Brent
have
Forbes will get the start.
Brent Forbes, like, starting, which
Pat Connaughton will play too many minutes because Coach Budenholzer has some obsession with Pat Connaughton.
I mean, Forbes, I don't, is only 3,800.
I was going to say, I don't
17 shots last game, played 33 minutes.
He's also shooting. Like, last game was his first, or excuse me, two games ago was his first time not making at least 6 shots for the first time in 5 games. Like, he is a very volume-heavy player. The issue, like, look at his peripherals. They're so bad. Like, yeah. He has 2 rebounds over his last 3 games. So if he's not hitting his shots, and if he's not taking shots, even at 3,800, he's not going to get there. I don't hate Brook Lopez at 4'7". My issue is the minutes. Like, they've been a little more erratic lately. But if if we expect Toronto to still play Aaron Baines a significant amount, I expect Brook Lopez to still get significant run. My issue is as soon as Chris Boucher potentially comes at the five, then they'll just slide Giannis down to the five.
Brook Lopez is 4,700. That's kind of all I have to say about it.
I know. He's cheap. He's really cheap.
Still don't know if I want to play him, but...
Yeah, I don't.
He's there. For Toronto, Van Vliet, 8,200. Lowry, 7,400. Siakam is 8,100. Then Chris Boucher, 6,600. Minutes back down against Minnesota in the last game. A little bit of a scary spot with Giannis. Giannis isn't like Embiid or Harden in terms of, you know, drawing fouls, but he's obviously going to slash and they'll give him fouls. 6,600 for Boucher. And then, I mean, Lowry is pretty cheap for a guy that has a huge floor, I think. There are some ceiling games in there. He's going to play massive minutes. Thoughts on Toronto?
So I still typically don't like to go overload against Milwaukee, but like these three on Toronto, Van Vliet, Siakam, and Lowry are just priced. And I would even consider Norman Powell in that bunch now too. Like he has been one of the go-to scorers on this team this season. I think they're all priced very appropriately, especially if we expect this game to stay close. My initial glance, I want Kyle Lowry at 7-4. I was scared, too scared off of him to play him last game because there's been a lot of coach speak about wanting to limit him because of the wear and tear and injuries he's dealt with. But if he played 40 minutes last game, I don't think they're worried about wear and tear. So 7,400 for Kyle Lowry, especially in a matchup without Drew Holiday, is one that I have a ton of interest in. Van Vliet's fine at 8-2, but I do think I prefer Siakam for $100 cheaper than Van Vliet. How do you prioritize these three, or I guess four if we're including Norman Powell at the top?
I think I would go Lowry, Van Vliet, Siakam, just because we know Milwaukee will give up production from three, and I think Van Vliet and Lowry have a better chance of doing that than Siakam does. I think they're all viable. We know Milwaukee plays fast, but I would prioritize the guards over Siakam. OG's doubtful, so Norman Powell is going to once again start, play in a close game, 36 minutes or so. And he actually leads his team in transition scoring, so a fast-paced game might actually benefit him more so than some of these other guys. And then you can sprinkle in Chris Boucher in tournaments, but it's a little bit scary, obviously, because the price is up to 6,600. He's coming off a down game, but the minutes finally came back down, and he's facing, you know, a guy like Giannis who can get fouls and get to the line. So a little bit scary.
Yep. Yep, I agree. Is there any interest? Obviously, let's say, obviously, OG's doubtful. I feel comfortable ruling him out. Utah Watanabe, if I even pronounce that correctly, doubtful as well. So we should continue to see more DeAndre Bembry. Continue to see incremental Stanley Johnson. Do you have – I'm personally asking Stanley Johnson on my player pool. I do every
– Yeah.
Do you have any interest in Bembry at 3-4?
Not really. I would rather play the Denver value, I think.
Yep, I agree 100%. I'd rather play RJ Hampton than DeAndre Bembry, which sounds weird to say, but I do.
Yeah. Let's move on to the Lakers. They're at Minnesota. Obviously, Anthony Davis is out. D'Angelo Russell also out on the other side of this game with a leg injury. He's missed, three in a row now with that injury. Karl Anthony Towns has been back. He has been playing well, per usual. I'll tell you what. Towns is still too cheap at 9,300, but let's start with the Lakers. Let's play LeBron.
It's LeBron and... I'm going to defer to you on this. What are you doing about Kyle Kuzma? I know my answer, but I'm sure yours is going to completely differ.
He's 7K. He's playing better.
But the thing is, like you said last time, he's good for 30, but like has like 37 against Memphis.
All right, here's my problem. I'll just play Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah, you're saving what, 1,200? I don't hate that call. I mean, we have not like... Is it out of line to say that 37 drafting point game was his ceiling?
Who, Kuzma's?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I view. And, like, he's not even a guaranteed lock to play like 30 minutes, even with Davis out. There's been games where he still plays like 26. I don't want to pay 7K for Kyle Kuzma. I know some people will with Davis out, and he's been playing better lately. I'll give him props, but I just can't pay that for him. I would rather just play Dennis Schroeder at 5,900. He hasn't been great, but he's been better over the last, you know, six games. We know the ball is going to be in his hands. We know the minutes are going to be there. And he's not like the direct backup to where he gets the minutes, but he's already going to play the minutes anyway, and he'll get a usage bump, obviously, with Davis out. Like, I'd rather just play him. And then I never know what to do with Montrezl Harrell.
Oh, God. I don't know either. Like, price is certainly super, super appealing at 6'2", especially given the matchup. But 11 total shots over his last two games. Minutes are literally all over the place. I'd like to think he sees significant run here. I can't say I'm confident enough to prioritize him over half of the guys we've already talked about.
Yeah. Just play LeBron. I don't think, like, Taylor Horton Tucker played 25 minutes last game. He played a lot of the fourth in a game that wasn't really close. Maybe he gets some extra run here where they can, you know, play LeBron at the four and Harrell at the five or Gasol at the five, and then Horton Tucker can play whatever. But you just know to go to LeBron. You can play Schroeder. The other side's interesting, though, because this matchup's obviously better for for Towns now that Davis is out, because Montrezl Harrell will not be able to guard him when he's on the floor. And Marc Gasol is still a viable defender, but he's not going to play huge minutes anyway. I love Cat here. 9,300. I think it's too cheap.
Yeah, I think it is too. The absence of Anthony Davis is a massive, massive upgrade for Karl-Anthony Towns. I think he will, like, he's a player good enough to pull Marc Gasol out of the paint and take advantage of him that way, because we know how many threes Karl-Anthony Towns likes to shoot, and he's going to continue to soak up like an astronomical amount of the usage rate on this team. So I love it, even if D'Angelo Russell was in, I would love Cat this price. I just think he's too underpriced. Like, this has, I'm not going to go out and say this has like Nikola Vucevic vibes to it, but I just don't think he's getting the respect he deserves on DraftKings specifically. I believe he's much more expensive on FanDuel. Let me double check what his price is. He's 9,500. I love him on both sides.
Yeah, I just, the usage rate's going to be there, obviously. He's taking plenty of shots. The last, what is it, three games, his usage rate isn't even as high as I think it's going to get to at a certain point if D'Angelo Russell keeps missing games, which, I mean, he's been on the injury report for like a month straight now, so I don't know how close he's going to be to returning. And I was going to pull up the on-off splits for the Lakers with Davis off the floor, because I'm interested to see how much they change, obviously. But what about the rest of this team? I mean, Anthony Edwards, the usage rate's not as high because Towns is back, but he's playing power forward, which is interesting. Maybe gives him some more rebounding opportunities. And you have the guards with Malik Beasley's obviously a really safe play, I would say. Rubio still hasn't been that enticing. What do you think of the rest of Minnesota?
I think Anthony Edwards would be my second favorite behind Karl-Anthony Towns, but I agree with everything you said about them. The only other one I would add is Jared Vanderbilt. Not necessarily a priority. We don't even know if he's going to start, but he did draw the start against Toronto, played 23 minutes, did struggle with some fouls, but posted 12.7 boards. Cheap enough where I think, unless like screaming value opens up elsewhere, he is in consideration, just far from a priority.
So the Lakers' defensive rating, obviously it drops by around 4 points with Davis off the floor. So it's obviously he's one of the best defensive players in the league. I was just curious how much it does drop. But yeah, Edwards at 6K flat should take 14 to 20 shots anywhere in that range. And the last couple games at power forward, 6-7 rebounds, assists. He's just been better in general lately. I think it's still a really fair price tag for him with D'Angelo Russell out. Let's go to Portland at Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City still really banged up. No SGA, no George Hill, no Maladon. They're banged up. Al Horford, 7K. He's just been doing a little bit of everything. And he had the two games where he played 34 minutes. They went to overtime. They went back down to 28 in a close game against Denver and 30 in a close game against Milwaukee. even at this price tag, if he only plays 28 to 30 minutes against Portland, he, like, his advanced metrics over the last week or 2 weeks, they're awesome. I mean, the usage rate's high, the assist rate's high, the rebound rate, like, he can still be worth a 7K price tag in the right matchup in 28 to 32 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. As long as his team remains this thin, I will have significant interest in him.
26.5% usage, 1.3 fantasy points per minute, 18% assist rate, 21% rebounding rate for Horford over the last 2 weeks.
Which is essentially when they've been dealing with all the health protocols and injuries. Yeah. This is also a pretty enticing matchup. Enes Kanter is one of the best rebounding centers in the league, but he's also not the greatest defensive center. So I absolutely love attacking Portland from the five. Outside of Horford for 7K, which, again, I'm more than willing to pay as long as the team remains this thin, I will continue to really, really love Hamidou Diallo at 6'7". I think last game was an extreme outlier, 26 minutes. It was a close game, so the minutes worried me a bit, but the outlier being the 3 of 16 shooting, his stocks were down a bit, and, I mean, going back to the minutes, like, look at his last 5, 6, 7 games. Like, that is the lowest by a significant margin. This is a phenomenal matchup for Hamidou Diallo, especially if he's playing so much point guard. Not only is Damian Lillard one of the worst defensive point guards in the league, if you're looking at defensive real plus minus, but he offers so, because he has the ball in his hands, obviously, more than anyone else on Portland, he offers so much defensive peripheral upside for a player like Diallo who can rack up steals and blocks. So I absolutely love him in this game at 6'7". If I'm game stacking, he is a priority.
Yeah, I'd much rather go up to him than pay $5,400 for Lu Dort. And I like Lu Dort, but I mean, Diallo with those guards, George Hill, SGA, and Maladon off the floor, 26% usage, 23% rebounding rate, over a fantasy point per minute. I definitely like him the most out of the guards and wings from this team. Like, a lot of these guys obviously got priced up because they're playing so many more minutes and they have the ball in their hands more. Like, Kenrich Williams is small forward, power forward eligible. We know he handles the ball a bit. He'd probably be my third favorite at $5,300. He's playing huge minutes right now. I'd rather play him because he has more peripheral upside than Lu Dort. Yep. We talked about Horford. What about Bazley?
I have a love-hate relationship with Darius Bazley. Like, he will have a game like he did against Milwaukee, or I think it was that first game. Both games against the Lakers went to overtime, right? I think it was the first game where he had like a 21-15 or some 20-15 or 16 double-double. Like, that is well within his range of outcomes, but as frequent and as likely as those outcomes are, so is like a 7.8 rebound outing, and at 6'1", that's not going to get you anywhere you need to be. This is a good matchup overall from a team standpoint, but if we're expecting to play power forward most of the time, he will be seeing a lot of Robert Covington, who is a good defender, scrappy on the boards, like a good perimeter defender too, who could take away Bazley's perimeter shot. So I like him. 6'1 is a fine price, but I think looking at the Thunder, I'd be more inclined to spend up for Al Horford or Hamidou Diallo instead of 6'1 for Darius Bazley. I would probably prefer him at 6'1 over Kenrich Williams at 5'3, if I'm being honest, though.
All right. On the Portland side, I mean, Dame, that end of that game against Dallas was very fun, and he did Dame things. 34-11, still just 9,700. I know we talk a lot. He hasn't had the consistent 55-60 point game since McCollum's injury, but Oklahoma City's defense isn't anything to fear, especially with the injuries they have. Just, I feel like it's just wise until these guys are back or until it's a loaded slate to just kind of have some exposure to Damian Lillard pretty much every night, especially when he's priced like this. Damian Lillard over the last 10 games, 9.2 minutes of possession per game, is third in the league behind Trae Young and Luka. He's also averaging 82.5 touches per game. The usage rate's going to be around 32%. Not really needed to go too much more in depth with Dame, especially at this price.
Yeah, I don't really know what DraftKings is doing, pricing him under 10K still, but by all means, like, I fully want everyone to take advantage. Like, he's a surefire bet for 20 shots, probably 10 plus from three. And because the rest of his team has really stepped up, especially the likes of Gary Trent, who has filled in almost, I'm not going to say almost seamlessly for CJ McCollum. That's an ignorant statement. But in terms of volume, like, he's making his shots, which obviously boosts Damian Lillard's assist potential. So I think he's a phenomenal spot. This Oklahoma City defense is a shell of itself, given how thin they are. So I'm totally on board with Lillard. If I don't, I probably won't end up stacking this game. So Lillard would probably be my one-off I want. But if I do, there's no way around Damian Lillard.
Cantor at 7K, he didn't close that Dallas game at all. Like, he was barely on the floor in the fourth quarter, which was interesting because it's not like Dallas just played, you know, it's not like Dallas played like Dorian Finney-Smith and, you know what I mean? Like, they had Porzingis on the floor.
Yeah.
And Cantor wasn't in foul trouble. So that was kind of interesting. But, like, Oklahoma City at least still has their centers, right? Like, they still have Horford. They still have Bazley. He's not really center, but, you know, he's a power forward. They still have Muscala and Roby. So, like, I would expect Cantor to be back to 28 to 30 minutes in this matchup. I mean, Oklahoma City's bottom five against the post and against the roll man out of the pick and roll. Cantor's rebounding rate's pushing like 35-40% without Nurkic this year. So I still have interest in Cantor in tournaments. I don't really understand why he didn't close that game because he wasn't in foul trouble. I believe they closed with Covington. Derrick Jones Jr. was playing center for them a lot of that game. He was covering Porzingis in the fourth quarter.
I think a lot of that had more to do with the fact that Dallas runs Porzingis at the five so frequently and how much he can stretch the floor. Like, if you look at Oklahoma City, assuming Horford is in the game during crunch time, which I expect him to be, I would expect Enes Kanter to be out there. My concern, though, is if they then go Darius Bazley at the five and go small with, like, Kendrick at the four, is Cantor going to be on the court, or would it be a Derrick Jones? Would it be a Robert Covington? Because in that situation, I think it's more reasonable to expect Portland to go small.
Yeah, it was real. Like, we've seen them close games with Covington at the five earlier in the year, and like I said, it was Derrick Jones Jr. Against Porzingis in a lot of that fourth quarter I was watching. So just something to keep an eye on. Do you have interest in Covington at 5'5"? That's not a bad price tag for him at all. If he's going to be playing more four and five,
I don't hate the price.
I also like Gary Trent. We kind of skim past him, but he is.
Yep.
Since he started, I think 10 games in a row, and he's playing like 37 minutes. Like, he is just playing so many minutes. He's shooting the ball well from three. He should probably be 6,200, 6,300 in my opinion, and he's at 5,700. It seems a little bit too cheap.
Yeah, I agree. And for what it's worth with Covington, he's $1,000 more on FanDuel. I will essentially rule him out on FanDuel at 6,500, but 5,500, I don't mind him on DraftKings.
Yeah, and the Thunder allowing the six most points per game to shooters off screen. Gary Trent's among the league leaders in points per game off screen. He's done a good job in that regard all year, and especially since McCollum has been out. So, all right, let's close it out. Brooklyn at Phoenix. Kevin Durant, obviously not going to play in this game. They said he won't play Monday or Tuesday with a mild hamstring strain. Got to keep an eye on the Nets. They're playing right now, front end of back-to-back against the Kings. So it's possible one of Harden or Kyrie Irving sit on the second end of back-to-back. If I had to guess, it would probably be Kyrie, but we'll see. I don't know what they're doing at the moment against the Kings, but it's such a good spot for them because the Kings are like the worst isolation defense in basketball, and that's all that Harden and Kyrie do, but especially without Durant. I mean, with Durant out, if these guys are back in the lineup, Harden has just been so good. And I've struggled with it because I've always preferred Kyrie and I've always preferred Durant because they've been cheaper. But Harden's playing that true point guard. His assists have been great. And Kyrie talked about it. He's playing off ball and he's turning in more of a spot up shooter, which he can still very well do. You have Joe Harris, you have Durant when he's healthy. Phoenix defense is good, but like, with the usage these two are going to see, they're kind of matchup proof in any game anyway. But
with 6 minutes left in the second quarter, Harden has 15-6-4 right now.
Yeah,
Brooklyn's at 58-49. Like, he is going, his assist rate is going to skyrocket, and it's going to continue to. As you said, Kyrie openly playing off ball. It does help that obviously that gave him shooting guard eligibility on DraftKings, which is great. My thing with both of these, like it's hard for me to say I'm higher on one than the other, because with their prices factored in, like one of the biggest advantages Kyrie has is that he's $1,700 cheaper than James Harden. And because James Harden is running at the point guard, there's a chance he sees more Chris Paul, which Chris Paul defense, obviously a very real thing. Not that it matters a ton with a player of Harden or Kyrie's caliber for that matter, but it has more, it has a non-zero impact. If I like Harden either way, obviously, if Kyrie is to sit, I'd have a hard time prioritizing Giannis over Harden, even in this matchup.
Yeah. And Brooklyn tonight with Durant out, I believe they started Harden, Kyrie, Bruce Brown. Joe Harris started at the four.
And Jeff Green at the five.
And Jeff Green, right. Yep. That's a very small lineup, obviously. So on the flip side, he's been pretty bad lately, but DeAndre Ayton should be able to do whatever they want if that's what they decide to do. The problem is Devin Booker's back to being Devin Booker. Crushed the Sixers. He's gone for 30 real points in three of his last four, went for 27 last game, even though he had 17 in the first quarter against Orlando, finished with 27. I don't know, man. Like, I struggle when this team's at full strength. Ayton has the best individual matchup. We know that. Brooklyn's mm-hmm. soft. I mean, I don't know if we know that, because Brooklyn can't defend guards either. They give up 120 points in their sleep. Phoenix is kind of, they're all kind of in play for me. But if one of Harden or Kyrie sit, then it takes me off a little bit, because Harden or Kyrie, whoever plays, would have to do everything in their power to keep this game close, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. The only ancillary plays on this team are going to be contingent on whether or not Kyrie and or Harden, I shouldn't say and or Harden sit. You know, if Bruce Brown sneaks into the starting lineup at 4-6, I think he can warrant some consideration. I don't know if I get to Jeff Green at 5-2. I would imagine they throw DeAndre Jordan back in the starting lineup with DeAndre Ayton on the other side. So I don't hate DeAndre Jordan at 45. The only issue, again, center is typically a very loaded position, especially now with Giannis having center eligibility. We talked about Karl Anthony Towns. We talked about Zion, Pascal Siakam.
Do you have any interest in Jordan if he starts? I know he's available tonight, didn't start.
If I spend down at center, I think he'd probably be my number one option. He's really cheap. Like $4,500 is very cheap for what he can rack up in 25 minutes, let alone he saw 37 minutes against the Pacers two games ago. So I think his range of outcomes is strong enough where he would probably be my priority if I spend down at the position.
All right, and Phoenix, real quick before we get out of here. I think Ayton's my favorite, but it's hard to ignore what Booker's doing right now. And when Booker's himself, and he's scoring a crazy rate, he's shooting the ball a ton, but the peripherals have been up a little bit. If that's going to continue, he's a little bit too cheap at 8,300. The question is, will that continue? But against Brooklyn, a terrible defense, I'm willing to find out at 8,300, I think.
Yeah, it's hard for me to get early season Devin Booker out of my head. Like, 8,300 is a good, very good price, especially for his recent form over the past 5-6 games. He's reassumed the role of the primary scoring option. He's picked up some of his additional peripherals. Obviously, his assist rate is not going to be as high as it was last season, but he is the go-to option this offense, and that's being reaffirmed over these last 5 to 6 games. This is a matchup, though, where if you target him, or where if you're going to target him, this is the game. So I'm fine with Devin Booker for 83. I think I would prefer Devin Booker at 83 to Chris Paul at 78, just because I prefer, as crazy as it may sound, I prefer Kyle Lowry at 7-4 over a Chris Paul at 7-8, especially if I'm targeting Booker. If I'm not targeting Booker, I'd probably hedge with a Chris Paul lineup. The player that I'm torn the most on here is DeAndre Ayton. 7-1 feels like a great price. He's just been so inconsistent. And that inconsistency isn't just like fantasy point output. It's his minutes. It's his volume. It's his rebounding. Like, he is all over the place right now, and I don't know what to do with it because this is a phenomenal spot for him.
Yeah. I think if they play through him in this game, he could go for 20 and 17. Like, he has that in his arsenal and his range of outcomes. But if Booker is going to continue to run the show like he's been the last 5 or 6 games, then I think that obviously hurts DeAndre Ayton. So I think I want to get exposure to one of those two. I think one of those two is going to have a really good game. Matchup is great for pretty much everybody, But the secondary pieces, like Cam Johnson, Jay Crowder, I'm not really on them. Mikal Bridges is somebody I rarely play, but at 6,300 with this team at full strength, yes, he's coming off a good game. Just not a huge... He has a decent floor because he gets enough peripherals and stuff, but his ceiling's kind of limited because he usually doesn't score a whole lot, and that's just a little bit too expensive for me at 6,300.
Yeah, I can echo that. I just don't know if I want to pay that price compared to other players in the mid-tier that we talked about. Like, I would probably rather go Robert Covington for 5'5 or Mikal Bridges at 6'3. Is that really that ignorant to say? Like, I'd rather play Covington. What about, like, obviously Dario is back. Still probably going to be limited to under 20 minutes. Jay Crowder.
Dude, they've been playing Dario at the 5. They played him at the 5 against Embiid, which was crazy. Like, he was playing meaningful minutes at the 5 against Joel Embiid.
That's another aspect about DeAndre Ayton that worries me, because then they throw Jeff Green at the 5. It'd be so easy for them to take Ayton out and just put someone like Dario Saric at the 5, or even like a Jay Crowder at the 5.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, because the wing and front court is healthy now, I don't know if I'll get to any of them. Even the Cam Johnson at $4,000 flat, like, he's taken a massive step back in terms of playing time. Yeah. He's gone from that 28 to 30 minutes now to 20, 24, 19 just because of their health. Where I think this game is Booker, Paul, maybe some Ayton if you feel comfortable, and you just move on. Which is annoying, though, because it's the Brooklyn Nets who are stacked the entire team.
No, I hear you. They're healthy. I mean, they had stretches where they're without Crowder, and Saric was out with the health protocol stuff. And Booker missed some of those games too. Like, it was, now they're pretty much healthy. So, and they're a team that counts on a lot of guys. So it's not as appealing for fantasy. They have the three obvious guys, and even those three aren't even like the most trustworthy. We've seen that this year. So we will see what happens. A lot of high-end players in good spots here, and there might be less depending on news. Obviously, keep an eye on news throughout the day on Tuesday. Check out the content. Joe will have the 5 stats article. I'll have the game-by-game article. And, of course, we'll have all the other content in FTN Daily, live streams, all that good stuff. Joe, any closing thoughts?
No, just hoping Marcus Morris keeps having this massive ceiling game for me right now.
Yeah, I you said Marcus, and I immediately thought of Markieff for some reason. I was like, wait, the Lakers are playing right now?
And no, then, Marcus Morris has 21, 2, and 3, and it's the second quarter right now.
That'll happen when the Clippers are missing all their players occasionally. But best of luck on Tuesday's slate. Have a good one. We'll be back on Wednesday for some more basketball action here on the FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast. Till then, we'll see you.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.